Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. This is the Thursday edition. A lot to talk about in today's program. Major train crash here in the United States. That's an ongoing story. Details about that. Also, some more school violence yesterday, unfortunately, in the United States. We'll have a detailed update about that situation. A few other stories to get into. And have you ever wondered how fast you can go in a Dodge Neon? One man found out. He's in trouble because of it. More details on the way. This edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We have an online presence at kpcg.fm. You can listen there or the live stream of thetrumpet.com as well. Lots of options. I'm Dwight Falk, Grand Turgeon here today. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that, at kpcgfm, and you can email us comments at kpcg.fm. How you doing today?
Great.
Yeah, good.
Just snuck in here on time.
I'm never worried. I always know you'll be here, no matter how close you cut it. You've never let me down yet.
Not yet.
I have wondered, what am I going to do if he doesn't make it? Just ask questions and wait.
Answer the questions yourself.
I try to throw my voice, work on my my impressions. Well, some headlines to get to this morning. One of them, a train crash in New Jersey. A New Jersey Transit commuter train crashed into the platform at the Hoboken station. Of course, it's all over the internet, video and pictures, a lot of damage. They say the train didn't even really slow down. At least 100 people injured, critical in some cases. A few people have died. That number is changing, so I suppose it'll change throughout the day somewhat. Service into and out of Hoboken station, of course, was suspended after the crash. And Hoboken is located just across the Hudson River from Manhattan, is a major hub for commuters traveling into New York City. If you've ever been in that area, you know it is very busy and a lot of people. So this, on top of just being a really bad situation, is going to also cause problems for commuters.
Yeah, that's right. Probably, how many do you think? At least hundreds of thousands missing work or being late to somewhere.
Yeah, that's always a lot of congestion in those areas, and so this is a pretty bad accident. It's early in the story, of course. So, you know, was it just a technical mistake, something with the track or the train? Don't know yet. More information will be coming out, but quite a few people injured, and the numbers were changing. You know, at first it said one dead, and then three, and I think those numbers will jump around because out of those injured, there were quite a few in critical condition, I guess. So just having to go through all that even wreckage and just try to figure out what's happened is going to be a massive job today.
Right. Yeah, probably a lot of those people had no idea the crash was coming. I don't think there's normally a seatbelt on trains, so people probably were looking down, reading or on their phones or something, and then didn't have a chance to even look up and brace for it or hold on to something.
Yeah, because that's what you do on those trains. Yeah. You just kind of go into your own bubble, mm-hmm. read, and maybe do work, maybe listen to something, and you expect to get there safely. I mean, there are crashes, but they're pretty rare, so most people would feel safe. But this is one of those situations where there was an accident. So, and with trains, unfortunately, when there are accidents, they're usually massive accidents. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, there was some school violence here in the United States as well. A teenager kills father before injuring two children and a teacher at a South Carolina school. The shooter, who has not been identified at this time, was subdued by an off-duty police officer. Actually, I thought it was a firefighter. Maybe that story has changed. I've heard both. So anyway, somebody in the public service realm did subdue him, thankfully.
Well, I thought it was North Carolina, so I even have the wrong state.
Okay. Sorry, the story keeps changing. But the investigators said the shooter killed his 47-year-old father before injuring three others at the school. So, again, they're trying to unpack all the details there. But I saw it come across the headlines yesterday, and you think, oh, no, you know, here's another thing. Bad deal all around. nobody killed at the school, thankfully. I think the injuries were pretty limited, or pretty minimal, rather. But still a horrible situation, and then the father killed there. So apparently some sort of problem in the family. Don't know the details yet, but it seems like every couple of weeks something pops up, whether it's a school situation or terrorism or whatever. There's just a lot of tension out there.
Yeah, it must have been a family issue, because what kind of person shoots their own father unless, I mean, obviously they're mentally deranged and they have an issue with their father. So probably a lot of interesting details will come out on that, but it's just hard to even fathom doing something like that or having someone else do something like that.
There was a this video that's kind of going around as well, speaking of the tension that's sort of around, I guess, of a guy. He went to a political rally of some kind, and he made the mistake of wearing the Donald Trump paraphernalia. It was not a Trump rally. I don't know if it was what exactly the rally was for, if it was for Hillary Clinton or if it was a Black Lives Matter or some sort of something in that vein. And so he went there and he started broadcasting on Periscope, which is that, you know, app where you can broadcast live. Not a good idea, probably, because obviously he went there to be sort of inflammatory to the other side, and he was. And he got a pretty good beating. They went after him, and he broadcast it. And so it's up on a couple of websites, not a lot, but really, really scary situation. The police had to come in and save him, because I don't know if he would have got out of there. Not a good idea to go in there in the first place, but it just highlights the tension between these different factions, you know, because the thing is, at some point here in the very near future, somebody has to win this election, right? And it's just volatile as far as the way people are treating each other and the candidates, the supporters. I don't know. I can't remember it ever being quite as much animosity as there is right now.
Well, we've just come to accept basic name calling and wrong accusations like never before. So is it much of a shock when we see supporters of each side reacting this way to each other? That guy probably didn't have too high of regard for his own life to do something like that. But, and yeah, imagine if the president, whoever it is elected, and then anyone who supports the president and happens to wear a shirt supporting the president can get beat up if they're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty volatile. I think there's been some videos that people have done where they've gone into, they're more of, I guess they'd be considered conservatives, and they go into these rallies and try to instigate them, and they put them up online. But they're getting, sometimes they're getting into some dangerous situations. This young man, he appeared like, he kind of thought it was sort of funny in the beginning, and he got scared pretty quick because the crowd was coming after him. It started with name calling, but then it escalated into physical violence, and he couldn't get away. He was trying to get out of there, and they weren't letting him go. So, but it just highlights, again, the animosity between the two groups. It's not positive. It's not building to good things, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's just devolving, trying to solve things with fists instead of with words. That's pretty new for the most part, where it's widely accepted, at least. That's how most people are trying to handle these issues.
Yeah, and I think the media is very, very responsible for the tone and the feeling of people, because a lot of the headlines are just so inflammatory. They're so against one side or the other, usually against Donald Trump, but it depends, I guess, where you're looking. And because they're so inflammatory, and getting away from just looking at record or looking at job performance or things that you would look at in trying to determine who would be a good president, it's getting into personal shots and accusations and some pretty vicious name calling, like racist things like that, and so people hear that and they believe it. I mean, they just believe that it's true, and then they get all fired up, and you have situations like this where people are coming to fighting over things. That's a bad deal,
right? When the media calls Trump something like literally Hitler, anyone who believes that is going to then see any of Trump's supporters as his Nazi soldiers, basically. So how do you think those people are going to respond to Trump supporters when that is how Trump is described? It really is irresponsible of the media, and they know that a lot of their accusations are untrue, but they're just desperate for their side to win.
Yeah, and for those people that are being pandered to, hopefully different groups realize that it's just for politics. It's just for votes. It's not. It's because they have some great care for anybody. There's a teacher in, I think it was out in California, that got, I'm not sure if fired, but certainly some discipline. She got caught comparing Trump to Hitler in the class.
Right.
And I don't think she had much good to say about Hillary Clinton either. She didn't like anybody. And so there's some people that are falling into that third category where they're just against everyone. And, you know, you hear a lot of that, but I don't hear any solutions from anybody. Not out there anyway, as far as the protesters or the media. If everything is so bad, okay, well, what's the solution to it? You just don't hear a lot of that.
It has become really stylish for people to say, well, I'm disgusted by both presidential candidates. I don't really know if that's true in a lot of cases. I think it's just, it's easier than picking a side and then being hated because you're on whichever side. So people are just picking the popular third option, which really isn't an option.
Yeah, you know, actually at the debates on Monday, they tried to, one of the candidates, if you want to call them that, from Green Party or something, tried to get in. I think it was...
Was it Jill Stein?
Stein, yeah.
Yeah.
And it got escorted from the building. And, and you know, I don't know. I wouldn't mind hearing what they have to say.
Yeah.
Why not let him debate?
I mean, Gary Johnson especially, yeah. he's a more serious choice than Jill Stein. She seems like a bit of a hippie, but at least Gary Johnson seems like he's got a friendly medium in a lot of cases. I don't like some of the things. He thinks we should have open borders, basically, and should legalize marijuana. But there are some other areas where he does have some good points.
It reminds me of, say, when you're in high school and you have to vote for something, student body, you know, president and officers. And that always, it seems like every year somebody puts like a joke on the ballot, like Mickey Mouse or, and usually they end up winning. They get more votes than anybody. And so, and then of course, I guess they just disregard that. But I just wonder if they should do that in the presidential election. Put, you know, a fictitious character on the ballot, see who wins, you know, James Bond or somebody.
Right.
See if people vote for him.
I saw a video recently, and the guy being interviewed said, I hate both candidates. I'm voting for Snoop Dogg. Like, come on, Snoop Dogg. Is way worse than either one of those candidates.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's probably why they don't allow some of those people to be put on the ballot. They would actually get elected.
Yeah.
And then we'd all be sitting there going, now what are we going to do? Speaking of voting, there is an investigation going on into the Cascade Mall suspect, the guy that went shooting on that shooting rampage on Friday evening. Turns out he's not a citizen, and he's voted in three different elections.
Right.
So it's an onion with many layers, this situation here. It says a Cascade Mall shooting suspect, Arkan Seton, may face an additional investigation. Not that it matters in terms of what else he's done. I mean, he's going to get a lot of penalties. But this investigation is related to his voting record and citizenship status. Federal sources confirmed to King 5 that Seton was not a U.S. citizen, meaning legally he cannot vote. That might come as a surprise to some. However, state records show that he registered to vote in 2014 and he participated in three election cycles, including the May presidential primary. So I think that's interesting because surely he's not the only one that's snuck in there and voted.
I wonder what that has to do with possibly those different, I guess, relaxing of restrictions where you can kind of go in there and vote without even showing your identification. How can you stop just random people, maybe a tourist on the street, from walking in and voting if you don't really check them?
Yeah, there's no way to know who it is and if whether they're a citizen or not. So that's not a good deal. And then, of course, you see this is an extreme case, but I mean, obviously this guy had some real problems and he's voting for the president. I wish they'd reveal who he voted for. That'd be interesting.
There was a question of if he was voting for Hillary Clinton. I don't know if there was any proof for that, but that's what I heard.
Yeah, so who knows? But I think that just highlights there's a real issue there. And it's a tough deal because I don't think people want to question the validity of elections very much because then it becomes just chaotic. But if you're letting people vote that are not citizens, and they push for this, especially in the Democratic side, they've been pushing for this for years. How valid is it? I mean, if it's just anybody coming in to vote, and you're buying the vote because you know they're going to vote for you because you're giving them amnesty or you're giving them, you know, whatever it is. You're offering something, So that's bribery, just plain and simple. Mm-hmm. I know that goes on every side, but this is a bribery, and then it's just flat out against the law. So you can't vote unless you're a citizen. That's okay. That's not discriminatory. I can't vote in any election outside of the U.S., and I don't vote in any of them anyway. But I couldn't because I'm not a citizen, but that makes sense. The obvious reason being, because then foreign powers could influence nations, other nations, mm-hmm. and that's why it's not allowed.
Yeah, it's as if I took a nice relaxing vacation to Switzerland and then just strolled into the ballot box or the ballot booth one day and cast my vote for the next president, then made my merry way home. It just makes no sense. Why would we ever let something like that happen? I'm not upset that I can't vote in Switzerland's election, but it is true that one side in this country is trying to make people who aren't citizens upset that they technically can't vote.
Yeah, and it's just to get into power.
Right.
And so it's
blatant vote pandering, and it happens all the time. And it's as if these different groups who they're pandering to don't realize what's going on.
Yeah, it's under the guise of not discriminating, which it's crazy because it's just a power grab. Not discriminating. That's ridiculous. The feds are spending a lot of money, and sometimes it's on things that probably they shouldn't spend it on. They spend quite a bit of money studying if college kids eat junk food when they drink. This is a question that apparently needs to be answered. And to find the answer, it costs $50,000. I'm not sure why it costs $50,000 to find that out, but it does. The National Institutes of Health is spending, over $50,000 to study whether college students eat junk food when they drink. What do you think, just off the top of your head, yes or no?
No, from my experience, because no fast food restaurant has alcohol that they serve. I mean, maybe if they get some sort of package of Twinkies and have it at home, but I don't really see why that would correlate.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily just eating out. I think it's just buying stuff, bringing it home. The 2-year study rests on the hypothesis that, quote, heavy drinking may lead to unhealthy eating habits surrounding drinking episodes. Well, heavy drinking is an unhealthy thing in and of itself, and usually leads to other unhealthy behavior if, the last, thousands of years of man's history is any indication. The study also will determine whether heavy alcohol use contributes to weight gain among college freshmen. Probably it does, I would think.
How many of those freshmen are old enough to drink?
That is the question that is not answered. They're studying illegal. Not only are they studying whether or not people that drink a lot gain weight, but they're all illegally drinking. So there's a few issues here. That'll be the next study. Maybe we could get a grant to study, the effects of these studies on underage drinking.
To study the effects of studies.
Study the
Maybe
study.
I'll just test it myself and just catalog every time I have some alcohol what I ate with it.
Well, they're not just talking about the casual, drink. They're talking about the
probably wouldn't apply to me then.
The heavy episodes. Yes, the researchers say that junk food has been overlooked when studying why college freshmen gain weight. Boy, I find that hard to believe.
That kind of just sounds like, we know alcohol is one of those vices that can't easily be overcome. So we will skirt around the topic by looking at the diet and seeing if we can maybe modify that instead.
Yeah, it seems kind of like that. There's a couple of comments here on the story that were interesting. They said, this one commenter says, why don't they just conduct a study to determine whether alcohol contributes to drunkenness?
I don't know.
And then another one says, are you kidding me? If my memory serves me correctly, college kids eat junk food even when not drinking.
Very true.
So that's true as well. And then the third comment here and final one, they say, and this highlights the same point you brought out, Grant. Since it's illegal for freshmen and sophomores and some juniors to drink alcohol, isn't this study contributing to the delinquency of a minor? I had read the whole study and I hadn't even thought about their age. And then I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. They're not even old enough.
Most of them go to college at age 18. That's 3 full years away from a drinking age. So, yeah, a lot of them are drinking illegally as it is. And it sounds like the study's just accepting that this is going to happen. So let's just study the effects anyway.
When I was a senior in high school, a lot of people are talking about what college you're going to go to and that type of thing. And a lot of the recommendations from people that had gone to college in the past, a few years ahead of us, or people that knew them, and even the school counselor said, you know, you'd be better off in your first 2 years going to something a little more local before trying to go down to, say, for me, the University of Wisconsin, with the main campus is in Madison. Because if you go to Madison right away, most of those kids washed out because they got so much into the lifestyle, which was a lot of parties, a lot of drinking, unfortunately, and then they just suffered in their grades, and they end up coming back home with the tail between the legs, so to speak, because they had all these hopes and dreams, and they get caught up in the lifestyle and forgot about the educational aspect.
What an opportunity it is to go to a really nice university like that, too, and to just throw it away because you can't stop drinking and staying up all night and avoiding study. What a waste, really.
Yeah, especially for the freshmen at 18. I think once people got up into their 20s, it was a little different. It's not quite as exciting when it's legal, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they're a little more mature usually and kind of ready to get on with life. But when kids are coming straight out of home, straight from their home, to all of a sudden they're living in a dorm and all this stuff's going on, it was hard for a lot of kids. And so anyway, a lot of the ones I knew, and it was tough to get into that school. So you had to be like the best of the best in terms of academics because it was such a tough school to get into. And so it was sad to see some of those kids. I don't know if they blew it, but they set themselves back by getting caught up in the lifestyle, and all the hard work and all the effort they put in was kind of, pushed to the side. And so they had problems because of it. So those things do go on college campuses, unfortunately.
Right. So you're talking about kids who possibly got straight A's in high school,
sure,
washing out because they couldn't handle such a huge change going from parental discipline at home to pretty much no rules at a college campus.
Yeah.
At least if you go from a smaller college campus to a larger one, it's not such a drastic change and you can kind of adjust to the lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those college towns are crazy. I mean, Madison was a crazy town. They called it Mad Town because there were some odd things there. It's the only town I've been in where I've seen vampires walking around.
Right. Yeah, that's right. You saw random people in costumes just walking around
just
for no reason.
Walking around trying to be vampires. I don't think they were for real, but I think they wanted to be.
Maybe they identified as one.
Could be. That was before we thought about those things. That was ancient history back in the late 90s. If you ever wondered how fast you can go in a Dodge Neon?
Not really.
No, I never have either. But a Maine man, he will blow your notion probably out of the water here. He was clock driving at 146 miles per hour down Interstate 95, and the police caught him.
Just not a good life choice.
No, poor choice.
In any car, really, but especially one that's not known for speed.
No, Dodge Neon. So, it's a bad story, but in a way it might be an advertisement for a Dodge Neon. I don't know. They say Maine State Police say they've charged an 18-year-old Manchester man with driving a Dodge Neon at 146 miles per hour on Interstate 95. That's more than twice the 70-mile-per-hour speed limit. Doubled it up. More than doubled it up.
Wow.
The 18-year-old was stopped in Pittsville, Maine on Wednesday and was charged with criminal speeding. How'd they catch him?
How'd they even see him go past?
I just saw a flash of neon.
It'd be hard to catch up to a car going that fast right past you,
yeah, it would.
Especially if your car is still.
Yeah, no kidding. So he was charged with criminal speeding. It's not just speeding. I mean, because of how fast he was going, it's criminal speeding. Mm-hmm. A misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a fine of up to $1,000. I don't know. I don't know if they ever see any jail time off of those, but anyway, there's going to be a penalty there. The Portland Press Herald reports the stop was made by Lieutenant Bruce Scott, head of the State Police Traffic Safety Division. Scott says it was the fastest he's ever clocked someone driving. Dodge Neon. Yeah, they couldn't determine immediately if the guy has a lawyer, so he better get one. A couple of comments here about this story. This first guy writes in all caps, "Bogus!" with two exclamation points. No way a Dodge Neon could do 146 unless it was dropped out of an aircraft at 10,000 feet.
And it just kept on using that momentum.
Maybe it was. He said, an old Dodge Stealth, sure. A Charger, maybe. But a Neon didn't happen, he says. Say hello again to the news media where accuracy will always give way to sensationalism. But another commenter had the Neons back. They said, Car and Driver magazine achieved 153 in a Dodge Neon SRT4, which is obviously the sporty upgrade version of the Neon. So,
well, don't most speedometers on a car go up that high anyway for whatever reason?
Yeah, a lot of them do. I don't know what mine does. I think mine goes up to, I want to say 120 at least. I don't know
I think mine does too.
I think that's kind of the standard. And I don't know, maybe it just keeps going faster. Who knows? But anyway, so that's just unbelievably fast. Thankfully, he didn't hit, I mean, he could have been killed easily or killed somebody. That's just way too fast to be driving. But in a Dodge Neon, too. I'm surprised it didn't just, like, disintegrate.
I wonder what his reason was. Where was he going that was so important he had to go double the speed limit?
What do you say? What does the officer say when you pull that guy over? You say, do you know how fast you were going?
Seems like he would have every right to scream at the person.
Yeah, for sure.
Drag him out of the vehicle and cuff him right there.
Yeah, I mean, well, you think about it, you know, you're driving with your family or something, this maniac comes flying around. You can't stop. You can't, you know, a deer jumps in front of you. Anything could happen, but 146. That is unbelievable. It was the fastest I've ever gone in a car, and I was not driving. It was years and years ago. It was probably 100. Mm-hmm. And I did not like, that was like, this is too much. And this was a lot faster than that, obviously.
Yeah, that's about the same for me. And it doesn't feel comfortable. It doesn't feel right. I mean, you can see why speed limits are set when you start going past them.
Yeah, and a lot of the cars that can do quite a bit of speed are more of the sporty versions. So that they have a little better handling and that type of thing. Usually the drivers don't, but the car does. But a Dodge Neon, you know, you start getting too fast, that thing's going to start moving around, and boy, that would be a bad deal. There was one time I was, when I was younger, I was driving. I wasn't driving, I was riding. I was a passenger, and there was a man that was driving us, a group somewhere, and he was telling me about how he thought that there shouldn't be any speed limits because the interstates were nice and the cars could go faster and all this. And he's telling me this as he's speeding. And he's looking at me in the not looking at the road.
Yeah.
Very nerve-wracking situation for me. Telling me his theories on speeding. I'm like, How about you just keep an eye on the road?
The same people who go way too fast and who look at the person next to them instead of the road usually are driving with a single pinky as well. So they pretty much combine all of the worst traits of a driver into one.
Or the famous knee drivers.
Oh.
You drive with your knee on the bottom of the wheel while they're trying to, like, open a bag of Cheetos or something. It's never a good situation. But and then now you factor in, of course, texting and all those distractions, and got to be careful out there, especially if you see a Dodge Neon. I'll never look at the Neon the same.
No,
look at that sports car. Where'd you get that thing? What, this Dodge Neon?
Yeah, we just described so many driving flaws. We probably just incriminated a lot of our listeners, made them feel bad.
Oh, we've probably all been there a time or two.
Oh, exactly.
But,
no shame unless you do it all the time.
I credit driver's ed that I took when I was a teenager as preventing a lot of accidents in my life. I have some habits that they taught me, which were really good, blind spot, that type of thing. Numerous times I've looked at my blind spot and been like, oh, wow, I didn't even notice that person. So that stuff they teach, it really does help out.
Yeah, I've never been in a wreck. Well, except for that time I got hit by a deer that came out of the woods while I was driving past. But that's unavoidable. I've never been in a wreck with another car, at least.
And hopefully it stays that way. Nobody
and the class
that does
help a lot. And,
yeah.
And also, I think some of the scare tactics they use work pretty well. They have some graphic videos of different crashes.
Yeah.
At least mine did.
Yeah. It can be, it's serious. It's serious when you're on a wheel. So that's why you got to pay attention. Kia David program's coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is Evolution, the Deadly Hoax. Very important topic. Something that's very much ingrained in modern education. And there was a really good segment on the Trumpet Hour program yesterday. You can find the archives here on kpcg.fm that talked about natural selection and evolution. So there's it's something that I think a lot of people just accept at evolution because they've been taught it in school. And but when you look into it, it has become, as the title says, really a deadly hoax.
Yeah, on that Trumpet Hour segment, Christopher Eames mentioned how people who believe in evolution, they consider evolution itself a fact, and the theories are just how does evolution actually happen. So natural selection would be a theory. Evolution is a fact. You can't argue with that, or else you're just a fraudulent scientist or just someone who knows nothing in their eyes. There is a huge push, obviously, in the science community to exile people who believe in creation.
Yeah, and the danger and the reason it's a deadly hoax is because if you subscribe to the idea of evolution and you get rid of a creator, you get rid of a God, you also get rid of law. And, you know, if their theory is correct of just, well, we just kind of came from wherever we came from, well, everything then seems like just a natural outgrowth of that. Even the things we're seeing today, or with all this transgender and this and that and the other, if you're going back to evolution, people say, well, who knows? I mean, hey, we're just changing, right? Mm-hmm. And you get away from law, and that's the deadly hoax part of it.
Yeah, and the stereotype of the caveman doing whatever he wanted, whatever he thought to do at that second, killing a big woolly mammoth, whatever they think it was. Well, I guess maybe that's how we should always be, because that's how our earliest ancestors were. Maybe we just do whatever pops into our mind at the time, which obviously would be extremely destructive.
Yeah, it's a really good program, Evolution, the Deadly Hoax. Make sure you listen for that. Coming up here in a bit on KPCG, you can find the archives online at kpcg.fm as well, and the videos at thetrumpet.com. That Dodge Neon was trying to evolve, trying to turn into a plane.
It was shaking the building almost.
It's it's amazing how the thinking on some of that as far as evolution is concerned. It is very much ingrained, and probably everybody knows that if you've been to a school anywhere, especially up in the higher, like the universities, when you get into that, that's very much taught. So this is a good program. Make sure you listen for that here coming up in just a bit. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Richard Palmer, today filling in for Stephen Fleury. And from Edstone, England, he's talked a fair bit about Deutsche Bank. They're in danger of failing. And with everything that's going on in Europe recently, I'd kind of forgotten about the whole financial crisis that they've had recently. It was a huge, huge thing, but because of the terrorism and the refugees, I'm like, that sort of slipped my mind in a way. But it's still a big issue over there.
Yeah, it's easy to overlook a financial crisis when you're talking about terrorists brutally killing hundreds of people. So, yeah, that still has been going on, and different nations have pretty much collapsed or become enslaved to the European Union because of their financial situations, and now the Deutsche Bank is having some trouble too.
Yeah, and Germany, of course, has been the real bastion of financial responsibility, I guess, and the strength over there, and still are in a lot of ways. But Deutsche Bank having a problem here, a little headline from CNBC about that. It says Deutsche Bank can only be saved by the German government, strategist says. The German government's been stepping in on a few of these deals. Only a substantial intervention by the German government can stop the collapse of the country's largest lender, Deutsche Bank, according to Stefan Müller, the CEO of Frankfurt-based boutique research company DGAW. Deutsche Bank doesn't realize that something serious needs to happen, he told CNBC. And so Deutsche Bank says they're fine. Analysts say they're not. And so there's some comparison even to Lehman Brothers, what happened over here, that big meltdown. So it'll be interesting to see. We haven't heard a lot about it on the headlines here in the U.S. It's kind of one of those second-tier stories, but a very important one in Germany.
Yeah, and it just makes you think about the viability of such tactics as lending out lots of money to different people or corporations, and how many of those people just don't pay back as well. There are just a lot of systems that we have financially worldwide where it's just about debt or trying to hope that someone will eventually pay back what you lent them. And if those people aren't necessarily trustworthy, that could also hurt a bank.
There was a pretty interesting documentary I saw around 9/11. I was looking at some of the 9/11 documentaries. And then, of course, the financial crisis was around the same time in 2008. But what was interesting in this one documentary about the World Trade Centers is one of the people they were interviewing was talking about that day and what the people that they knew were doing in the tower. And the one thing that happened to highlight was there was a meeting of Lehman Brothers in the tower. And I thought, wow, how ironic that that played into this documentary. And I think it was made even before Lehman Brothers crashed. Mm. So here you've got the actual destruction of the towers, and then they're talking about Lehman Brothers in the tower who also fell apart. Obviously, they don't even exist today. I mean, you remember, I don't know if you remember, but when they crashed, people were selling the Lehman Brothers merchandise on eBay, like cups and, you know, things that they had because the company was no longer.
Oh.
And so they were selling it like a, like a, hey, you know, get this because you'll never see one again type of thing.
Selling for 1 cent or something like
that. Oh, they were trying to make a buck on it, you know, the Lehman Brothers cups and so forth. So who knows what will happen here with Deutsche Bank. Obviously, Germany is overall a powerhouse economically, but some problems here with this bank. So make sure you listen for this Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Richard Palmer, filling in today. And he's always got some good insights, and they're right over there, not too far away from Germany, so they get a lot of that that good insight that sometimes doesn't get filtered through here in the U.S. as much. This is a really interesting story that I think we're both excited to talk about. Being sports fans, this is from Breitbart. NFL ratings drop faster than Colin Kaepernick hearing the Star Spangled Banner. And so they're saying here that people are getting fed up with Kaepernick and these other athletes, and it's going to hurt their ratings, the NFL's ratings.
Yeah, it's funny how they compare the ratings free-falling faster than a professional athlete being able to drop to one knee during the national anthem. That is a good comparison, and you can see that the two things are quite connected. The last Monday night football game, or the one a week and a half ago between the Philadelphia Eagles and Chicago Bears, declined by double digits from last year's Week 2 Monday Night Football contest, and it represents the lowest number since the franchise moved from ABC to ESPN. So since Monday Night Football went to ESPN, it's the lowest Week 2 Monday Night Football rating ever.
It is a situation, I think, where guys like Colin Kaepernick and some of these other athletes, I think they're miscalculating the response to what they're doing, because I think celebrities as well, I think they live in sort of a bubble where they say what they think, and then the media kind of backs them up, or if anybody says anything negative, the media attacks them. And I think they feel like they're really taking a stand, and they're doing all these great things. But I think the majority of people just aren't interested in or disagree with their stance, or in this case, their kneel. And, you know, people want to watch a game. It's entertainment. At the end of the day, all it is entertainment.
Yeah.
And if it becomes an irritant or a burdensome in some way, people will get rid of it. It's not like it matters for anything. It's just entertainment. It's a game. And these people are paid to play a game. And now they're going to take political, you know, stands or kneels during the game or before the game. I think a lot of people are turned off by that. I know that I am.
Right. I mean, it's almost tempting to just tune into the game late, at least, so you don't even have to see the cameras focused on a player kneeling on the sidelines before the game. But I think a lot of people are just avoiding watching it altogether. They're not just tuning in late. It also talks about how players like Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, or Aaron Hernandez, who knocked a fiance unconscious, brutally beat a child, and killed one or more people, respectively, are actually less damaging to the NFL's image than Colin Kaepernick, because at least they did their damage away from the field. This guy is bringing his social justice warrior stance to the stadium and impacting people who are there just to watch sports and not be involved in whatever he believes.
Well, right. And the difference between those examples that he brought up and, say, this Colin Kaepernick thing is that those people, that's kind of their business. It's a bad deal,
yeah.
But it's their business. When people are protesting the anthem, they're making it everybody's business, and they're trying to push their very narrow view on the viewer. I feel, you know, people want to tune into a game to be entertained. That's all. And so if you turn it on and tune it in, and you've got this guy giving you a lesson, which is basically what he's doing, he's correcting everybody. People get sick of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he knows everything and he's going to correct everyone by his antics. People don't like it.
Yeah, it's like, to me, in my mind, it's like the equivalent of one of these aforementioned players wearing a shirt kind of glorifying the act, like kind of owning their transgression off the field and saying, yeah, I did it, and putting it out there in front of everyone who's watching on TV, like there's no remorse, there's no shame for the sin. This guy's just bringing it before our eyes, and we can't avoid it no matter what we do, because people are there to watch the game, and the cameras inevitably pan to him.
There, I saw a video about this topic, and I thought it was a really, really insightful. It was Colin Cowherd, and he had this commentator on there who happened to be a black gentleman, and he was talking about this and saying, you know, that they're really causing the NFL problems, Colin Kaepernick. And he made the correlation between the NFL today and the 1970s NBA, which I thought was a really good comparison. If you remember anything about the 1970s NBA, it was not popular. It was on the verge of going away, mm-hmm. which seems crazy today. But people didn't like it, and the reason they didn't like it was because the athletes were perceived as drug addicts, because a lot of them were. They would fight a lot on the court. It was just the game wasn't played with a lot of grace and skill necessarily. It was just kind of thuggery and pushing and shoving. People got tired of it, so much so that the league, of course, was on the verge of collapsing. And even in the very early 80s, the NBA Finals was played back off tape delay, like after your late local news.
Right.
Can you imagine that today? I mean, today it's like prime time all there is. But back then, no one even wanted to see it. What changed it was Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and then Michael Jordan. Three athletes who played the game exceptionally well, had very good rivalries. People got interested in them. And they weren't taking big political stands and all this. They were just playing basketball and playing it very well. And lo and behold, people liked it. So now the NFL is doing the same thing, where it's not about a game anymore in a lot of cases. It's all about, or they're trying to make it about, some political stance. And I know, as much as athletes don't like to hear, hey, you're just an athlete, you're paid to play, it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They're not paid to give commentary or political, you know, feelings. They can do whatever they want in their own time, but nobody's tuning in to hear Kaepernick. Why does he run for president if he knows everything?
Yeah, he doesn't like either of the options, right. So maybe he's the solution to this country.
So at the end of the day, like, their ratings are dropping, money's going to go away. It's not, it is what it is. It's entertainment. If it doesn't make money, there's no point in it.
Yeah, those three basketball players you mentioned too, I mean, they had issues off the court with gambling or sexual promiscuity, things like that. But the thing was, at least that was their own problem off the court, and they weren't trying to advertise it. It was just the media reporting whatever they found out. This is someone who is forcing a message on everyone who's around. Now, this piece is fair. It does bring up other reasons for maybe why ratings have fallen a little bit, like Peyton Manning being out. He retired after last season. Tom Brady's still serving a 4-game suspension. There are some franchises like the San Diego Chargers and Oakland Raiders who are pretty much playing in limbo. They don't know if they're going to move to a new location, mm-hmm. so their fans might get tired of the organization flirting with other cities and possibly thinking about moving there. So there are different reasons like that. Maybe too many penalties, too many unwelcome rules, like eliminating the kicking game by having the kickoff go through the end zone every time and the touchback always going back to the 25-yard line now. So there's a lot of different reasons, but then it says here, but the elephant in the room, actually three Dolphins, a Bronco, and two 49ers, continues to be the competitors in America's game, insulting America's song. Fans do not watch because of a quarterback who does not play. No one likes uninvited guests coming into their living room to insult them.
Yeah, exactly right. And, yeah, again, you know, all these leagues are really, they're star driven. So you need to tune in because you're interested in a player like a Peyton Manning or a Brady or whoever it might be, or a Jordan in basketball, because you want to see them. And sports heroes, they're kind of heroes because they win usually, but they're also upstanding, or at least they have the appearance of being upstanding individuals. They say the right thing. They play with sportsmanship, and they master their craft, and people look up to that. Little kids want to be like that. You know, adults can look at that and say that's a pretty, you know, good example. Nobody wants to see some guy, you know, throwing out his big opinions that are anti the country he lives in, and you're not going to be a hero to anybody. Nobody likes that. Maybe a few people on the fringe, but most people are going to tune out from that.
And the people who are applauding him are from the radical left media. no matter how you want to put it, they don't love this country the way they should. They think there are so many flaws in this country that need to be changed by pretty much flipping the entire system on its head. And the media's favorite party during their convention had no flags on the stage, not a single American flag the entire first day, just a dull gray stage. And you contrast that with the other party, at least they had 30 American flags on stage. Outside of the Democratic National Convention at the same time, there were people burning the American flag. So all these things tie together. There is a communist tinge to all of it, where really communists have infiltrated the radical left. And that message of being ashamed of the greatest nation ever is a communistic type message.
Yeah, there's some good write-ups about that specific topic at the trumpet.com that you can look up. A lot of good history there. A few other people are jumping in on this. Sports stars with their opinions. Serena Williams, the tennis player, says she won't be silent on race-related police incidents. And she gives this example. I guess she wrote some Facebook post or something where she was driving, or she had her, I forget who it was, her nephew or somebody drive her somewhere, and they saw a police vehicle. And so she said she got all scared, you know, in case something happens, which nothing happened, of course. But she says, all this went through my mind in a matter of seconds. I even regretted not driving myself. I would never forgive myself if something happened to my nephew. He's so innocent. So were all the others. What do you mean by that? So were all the others. You mean the ones that got into problems? They were all innocent? No, they weren't. They were not. The reports since have shown that they were not. And so to make a blanket statement like that, and then she continues and says, not everyone is bad. It is just the ones that are ignorant, afraid, uneducated, and insensitive. Well, the thing about that is, who decides? She decides who's ignorant or afraid or uneducated or insensitive? Who decides? If there's no law, who's going to decide these things?
Well, I would naturally presume that a tennis player is the ultimate expert on these things.
So it's kind of rolling along, and that's what I mean by, I think a lot of these players and some of the celebrities live in a little bubble because they one does it, another one doesn't, and they think they're all, you know, everyone's behind them, and I think most people are not, and they are not interested in their antics, and people can easily just not show up to your games, and then what are you going to do? Because you're not going to be paid or your matches, or you know your sponsors might leave. Well, there it is. You're free to say whatever you want, but you're not guaranteed money. That's not a guaranteed freedom in most cases.
And how many of these athletes speaking out have ever experienced, they're not really telling stories of how they've been affected by police racism or brutality, like they call it. You don't have a single example. Your example that you put on Facebook was you being worried for no reason,
yeah,
as you drove past a police officer and nothing happened at all.
And that's the thing, to say that everyone was innocent. That's not true. It's just not true.
That's a willful lie. She knows that's not true.
Yeah, that's the narrative. And so that's just a bad one. Media's jumping on board with all this. That show Empire, which I've never seen, but it's on, I think, Fox. They're praised for taking a stand or for taking on police brutality. They waded into the Black Lives Matter Wednesday night and the hit Fox series is being hailed for it. Well, hailed by who? A couple of writers. The network has found success with the show, which follows the travails of the Lions, an African-American family in the music industry. At the end of Wednesday's episode, oldest Lion son Andre is roughed up by New York City police officers as he moves boxes from his old home. The screen then goes black. The scene resonated with many viewers who took to social media to praise it. Again, this is a fictitious show about fictitious people, and they're portraying a fictitious event, but what they're doing is trying to tell everybody, hey, this is happening. It's fiction.
Yeah.
It's fiction. But it's getting people stirred up. And they're building a powder keg. It's a bad idea.
I mean, there's a divide here. This is a show with pretty much all black actors, and now they're saying that, oh, yeah, police came by and just roughed up this guy for moving boxes. When does that ever happen?
Yeah, it's... Again, it's just all jumping on the same narrative and kind of painting this picture like this is an actual event. It's just like we were talking earlier about, say, the evolution idea. It's just said so much that people just assume that that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with this. People just assume that's the way it is. But I do think the majority of people that watch some of these different events are getting a little fed up with it. You know, they're not going to watch these games or these shows or these matches anymore because, you know, it's people get tired of hearing the same really lie over and over again.
Right. It is a lie, and it just shows that people are very unwilling to learn, like we talked about yesterday, but they're very quick to teach by just putting out an innocuous Twitter or Facebook post that doesn't really say much, but it does stir up a lot of emotions, and that really seems to be the goal.
Yep, it's not heading in a good direction, that's for sure. So we'll have to see how those ratings go with the NFL. I know for myself personally, and I do like football, I haven't watched as much this year. I don't know if it's because of this or just, I don't know. I just haven't been as interested.
Same. I think I've probably watched four times less in the first few weeks of the season than I did on average last year. So it just shows you there is kind of a turnoff there. People get tired of these different messages being forced on them. They don't realize, like you said, most of the people getting into these protests are pretty much in a bubble, and they don't realize that the majority of people think America's great. And there are also a lot of minorities who are saying these people are poor representatives of us.
That's exactly right. The that interview that I saw with this analyst who was making the correlation between the NFL today and the 1970s NBA, he made a great point. He said, look, he said, I'm a black man, and he said, I don't want everyone to think that I'm just like Colin Kaepernick or these people. He said, in the same way that they're saying, you know, all officers are bad because of these situations, he's like, they're going to say the same thing about me. He's like, I don't agree with him, but yet the media is making it out like everybody agrees with them, and not everybody does of any community.
Yeah, the thing is, it's just the loudest people are the ones who are wrong, and it does give a bad stereotype to everyone else who doesn't even agree with them.
So it'd be interesting that you can look at the rest of that. And I think that video there, too, is at Breitbart. NFL ratings drop faster than Colin Kaepernick hearing the Star Spangled Banner. So that's an interesting story. And, again, it is entertainment, and it is big money here in the U.S. And they want to keep the money coming. They don't want to stop that. But it's kind of interesting. One other little headline to note here. Yesterday, Congress rejected Obama's veto of the 9/11 bill. And this is the first override of his presidency. The first. That was surprising to me. So he tried to veto it, saying they couldn't sue Saudi Arabia, I guess. And that's been vetoed, and he said they made a mistake, so I'm sure they'll go back and forth somewhat.
Finally, Congress decides not to divide along party lines. They saw something that they all thought was right, and they voted on it pretty much almost unanimously in the Senate. I believe it was 97-1 in the Senate.
It was, yeah. And then
348-77
in the Congress, I guess. So interesting to see. There's a lot of information about that. That story is at I think at Fox. So you can check that out if you want to. It's a long one. It's longer than a paragraph. Can't stay with it this whole time. So anyway, that's a bill that they're out they have out there, and I don't know what people have gotten, like people that are have family members that were killed in 9/11. I don't know what kind of payout they've gotten, if they've ever gotten anything. They may have, I just don't know. The reason I was thinking about it was the families in the Orlando shooting. They all got a pretty good payout.
Oh, okay.
I saw that yesterday, hundreds of thousands of dollars apiece.
Huh.
And I was just wondering, like, where does that money come from? And you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that a terrorist attack and the victims in it would then warrant a payout from the government for that. I think that's nice, but it's a little bit surprising because is the government admitting it was their own fault and thus paying for it? That's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that money is there. I know sometimes when there's a natural disaster, there's some sort of like federal aid that will come, but not sure why they got that money. But anyway, those that are wanting to sue Saudi Arabia, apparently they're, I don't know if they can or not. And where do you go to court for that? And then how do you make them pay? I mean, there's a lot of weird questions in that scenario to make. It's another nation. I mean, they don't fall under our jurisdiction as far as law goes.
So. Yeah, there are ways to sue them, but it seems really like it would be complicated. But finally, at least they're pinning Saudi Arabia for what they've done. And 15 of the 19 terrorists on 9/11 were from there. And the government of Saudi Arabia can deny all it wants to that it wasn't involved. But how come 15 of 19 were from that country? Either they were in on it or they weren't doing their part to stop terrorism within.
Yep. So that's an interesting story, and just interesting that's the first time they've vetoed anything in 8 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Very, very interesting. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Those are coming up here on KPCG, and you can find the archives at kpcg.fm. Have a great rest of your day. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. You can download Trumpet Radio live segments from kpcg.fm.